The following is a presentation of Geekster Media.
Do you remember when home video was in its infancy?
The perfect video store is popping up all over the country.
Do you remember the experience of renting VHS tapes at a store?
Right now, rent Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Cobra for just $1 a day each.
Do you remember when you kept a video store membership card in your wallet?
Welcome to Blockbuster Video.
Hollywood Video. We get what you want.
The warehouse is entertainment.
Relive the days when dead media was alive and kicking. This is Rental Return, Tales from the Video Store.
My name is Joel Schwartz, and I was the general manager of a chain of video movie rental stores, known at the time as the Video Movie Place. We had six corporate stores. Located in three cities in Ontario, three in Cambridge, two in Brantford, one in Paris, Ontario. We also had seven franchise stores, you know, mainly in small towns. My job title was general manager for the Video Movie Place, and I worked from 1984 until 1988.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michael Schwartz, and I worked at Blockbuster Video, late 90s. And I only worked there, actually, for a year. On and off. It was like a summer gig that turned into like a part-time thing.
This is a first for the podcast. I'm very excited. We have a father and son who both worked in the video rental store business. And I'm so excited to hear everything that you guys have to share. But I want to go back really to the beginning. So Joe, what is your earliest memory of being inside a video rental store?
Well, to tell you the truth, I never really ventured into a video movie store until I worked for the Video Movie Place.
Wow.
In fact, I think the only store in existence back in 1983, 1984 in Cambridge, Ontario, was a small rental outlet on one of the main streets in Cambridge. You have to remember, the video movie industry was in its infancy. There were virtually no stores anywhere, really. You know, maybe one or two, you know, that was about it. One thing I can tell you, though, okay, this is kind of a little off topic, but my father purchased probably one of the first VCRs in Kitchener, Ontario, in our city, in 1978. It cost him about $1,500 at the time, if you can believe it.
Wow.
And he bought two VHS blank tapes. You couldn't rent any movies. You know, there were no movies available on VHS. So he bought two blank ones, and I think they were about $40 each. I mean, can you imagine 1984 dollars to today's dollars? So one of the movies that he recorded was his favorite movie, Ben-Hur. Oh my God. Every time I went to visit my mom and dad, my dad would make me sit down and watch Ben-Hur. So I think I watched it at least 10 or 15 times. I mean, I could recite some of the lines for you if you want.
You got a Charlton Heston impersonation?
You remember the one with Charlton Heston? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's my introduction into video movies.
That is fantastic. Wow. That's so awesome. That it's kind of like being the first family on the block in the 50s that had a TV, right? And everybody's coming around. They're like, we got to see what you got. So did like your neighbors and people, were they interested in it?
Oh, God. Yeah. My friends would come around all the time. And, you know, we'd do recordings. My dad even bought like a camera. It was like really big. And he just was into tech. But you were talking about TV sets. My father and my grandfather were in the local newspaper back in 1950 or 1951, somewhere around there. And they had the first TV in Kitchener, Waterloo.
There you go, Adam.
Believe it or not.
You guys are historic. This family.
The Schwartz family is very important.
But Mike, what about you? Were you in the Video Movie Place? Like, what was your first time being in a video store that you can recall?
I don't have a memory. It just feels like I always was in one. Like, Dad, did you bring me to the Video Movie Place? Because I have these like faint recollections of being in one in Waterloo, maybe. But it just feels like it's in my DNA. It doesn't feel like, oh, this was that point. It was just like, hey, that's another room in our house. That's what every video store feels like to me.
Yeah. Mike, I took you with me all the time.
Exactly.
And you traveled around with me to some of the stores. So, I mean, my job was pretty loosey-goosey at the time. I mean, it was a new industry. And I mean, there were times where, you know, the babysitter wasn't available and, you know, your mom worked at the time as well. And and you'd pick out a movie. Sometimes I'd throw a movie on in the store and You'd sit on the floor and watch it, you know, while I serve customers.
There you go. That's my earliest memory, Adam.
That makes sense. Well, let's talk about this then. So, Joe, you said that there wasn't an industry to get experienced in, and here you are getting into it. You're becoming a general manager ultimately. So talk to me, how did you get this job at working the video movie place? Were you there like from the beginning of building up the store and the franchise?
Yeah, it was, you know, and I think I felt at the time that it was history making. You know, I could only see in the future that there were going to be improvements made. I never dreamt of DVDs, though, and Blu-rays coming out as quickly as they did. I mean, well, I used to say, well, that was within 20 years, right? So, but anyway, I just left my job as a shoe store manager, and I was looking to purchase a shoe store franchise with a company. And I worked for one of their stores in the Brantford Mall. And this was to learn, you know, their operation and, you know, to get to know the business before I purchased the franchise. But I was disillusioned with it. So I was looking for something else. But I got to know the owner of an audio record store. I mean, he carried, you know, LPs, cassette tapes, you know, Walkmans. So, yeah, the owner, we talked quite a bit, and he knew that I was involved with opening stores, and I opened them in many different locations, of course. And he told me that he was looking for somebody to help him expand the business. So I guess he felt that I was a shoo-in. I guess he felt that the experience that I had, you know, was going to help him, was going to be an asset to him. So he asked me if I wanted to be a general manager and help him expand the business. You know, tell you the truth, I have no idea why he hired me. I mean, really, I knew nothing about the video movie rental business at the time, but he saw something in me. So that was just the beginning. Yeah, we ended up opening quite a few stores then over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and let me ask you real quick, because again, you said you didn't know about it till you're probably going to this location being interviewed for a job. What did you think just in general when you were in a video store?
Well, I mean, seeing all the movies, I mean, VCRs were really expensive at the time, and I don't think I owned one. Oh, we had my father's. But by that time, you know, it wasn't working very well. So I didn't rent any movies. I loved movies. I mean, I grew up with movies. I used to stay with my grandparents. They used to send me to the movie theater on Saturdays and Sundays in Waterloo, Ontario, just to get rid of me. So every weekend I was there. I think my mom and dad like partying a lot. So that's why they took me to my grandparents' place. So I knew every movie, and I was really into movies at the time, so it was really kind of a shoo-in for me. And also opening stores, you know, I knew the logistics involved, finding locations, working out the leases and everything else. So the rest is history.
Can I just say something, Adam? Imagine if he didn't go into the video movie place and he did buy a shoe franchise. I would be a shoe expert. We would be doing a shoe podcast.
That's what I was going to say. You'd have your closet full of Nikes and Adidas and all the limited editions. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, Mike, but let's hear from you then. So how did you get this summer job, and why did you, you know, end up sticking around for a year?
Well, we lived by a video store growing up. We walked to one, and I just wanted to be around movies. Like, I'm sure my dad would admit, like, I used to make movies with my friends. But it wasn't until probably when I started at Blockbuster that I realized, oh, you can get a career in filmmaking. And I do have a career in the film industry now. But at the time, I was just like, I just want to be around movies. And I think I kept pestering them, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I knew someone there, and they finally were like, we need a greeter. And that's what I started as, a greeter at Blockbuster.
I didn't even know that was a job. Wow.
I didn't know either.
Well, when I got the job, I was frustrated because I found out that the greeter at Blockbuster was used to prevent theft. So in the training, I realized it wasn't about like greeting them and asking them about the movies. They actually didn't care if I recommended movies. It was about make sure you say hi because that deters a thief. That's all they cared about. And it drove me insane to find this out. I was like, but we're a movie store. We're supposed to recommend movies. We're supposed to know about movies. They were like, no. Keep an eye on them.
So literally you could have just been a robot. Hi, how are you? Hi, yes. How are you? Are you finding everything okay?
I didn't know if this was across all of Blockbuster stores. This was the case for the Cambridge location in Cambridge, Ontario, Canada.
Okay. Well, Joe, I am curious now, because Video Movie Place is a franchise, what were the layouts of the store? Were they all individual buildings? They were finding a new place to open up, and so you just adapted an existing retail space? Like, how did they lay out the stores?
Okay, well, these stores were very plain and very boxy. Now, keep in mind, we had 6 corporate stores. So I had managers running those. Franchise stores were in little towns and they were mom and pop operations, basically. They used our name because of the buying power. Now, we generally had the movies on racks, or at least the empty covers, and all the VCRs that we sold, and stereos, because we sold hardware as well. So movies were basically a sideline. We made great profit in them, but we also sold the VCRs and the stereos, and we even sold some of the first computers as well. I don't know if you ever heard of the Commodore 64.
Oh yeah, my brother had one. He was a computer guy in the 80s.
64
yeah.
megabytes. I mean, it was the top of technology back then. They were all basically the same. Now, one thing changed. I mean, when we got adult movies in, porno movies, we had to set up a separate section and a wall, of course, and it had to be monitored so kids wouldn't wander around, because people would come into the store and let their kids wander and look at the kids' movies, and the kids, sometimes you'd lose them and they'd end up in behind our counter and go, hey, how are you? So we had to make sure that people who had kids, or even teenagers, didn't go into the back there.
I gotta ask, because traditionally in the U.S., everybody talks about these Western swinging bar doors is a lot of times what they would put, or a beaded curtain, but you guys just had a back room area, or what did you have?
Yes, that's what we had. We had like a door, a door on it, but it was kind of like a swinging door. So, I mean, it blocked it off, but it wasn't really secure.
Was there something unique that you would always put into the stores that said, okay, you can tell this is a franchise, this is related to the other locations? Like, can you think of something that was iconic and related to the setup?
So our sign had the film and the Video Movie Place. So that's how they identified, and carried the same membership cards. I put together the coupon book, and each store had a coupon book as well that went along with the membership. Yeah, so that's how people identified with it. But, the name Video Movie Place, it wasn't the greatest names. I didn't come up with it. The owner did, but we ran with it anyway.
Okay. So, Mike, I am curious, because you were growing up going to all these other video stores and seeing the mom and pop ones and all of that, when you got to the layout of a Blockbuster video, what was your reaction to that kind of corporate, it's always going to be the same by the numbers setup?
It was kind of boring, I have to admit. It was my least favorite video store in our entire town, but it was the only place where I felt like I could get a job. we had a Jumbo Video down the street from Blockbuster, which is a Canadian chain, which I'm sure was a reason for taking out the Video Movie Place, which my dad may bring up. But, Jumbo Video, the horror section was actually a dungeon. Like, you would have to go under these arches, and there was like a glass case at the end of the horror section where it was like a monster, like a prosthetic monster at the back. It was so different. Like, Blockbuster is so corporate, but it was very clean. I have to say, I liked it. It was very clean. I could find my Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the same spot every time. It was, very well organized. But yeah, I think most people remember it. People have nostalgic feelings.
Yeah, definitely.
Our stores were very primitive. I mean, compared to the way Blockbuster came, when they came in, they were so sophisticated and they had the look. The look that we dreamt about.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you mentioned your coupon book, but I'm curious, what were like the rental fees 1984, to 1988? Like, what was the cost? And then what were the books like giving people the opportunity to do?
I'm going to give you a little bit of a history here.
Yeah.
When we started out in 1984, we were really raking in the profits. First of all, a membership would cost $100. Along with that membership, I don't even think we had the coupon book yet. No, we didn't. It just cost $100. A movie rental was $5 for a night. We weren't open on Sundays because here in Canada at the time, no stores could be open on Sundays. It was the Lord's Day. And I mean, that changed over time. And so we rented movies out for $6 from Saturday till Monday. But every other store was doing the same. I mean, we were making a lot of money. And then, you know, a lot of the mom and pop stores started popping up all over the place. And we were still making quite a bit of money. We never panicked, though, when stores opened up, you know, especially when they were smaller like that. And we never dreamt that there were going to be stores like Blockbuster or Major Video or Jumbo Video. We never dreamt that there would ever be that big a business in just renting movies. The reason why we didn't worry is because we carried the hardware. You know, and we even carried LPs, you know, we carried the computers. We were a whole line of audio video products, and the movies was just a small portion of our revenue. However, when we learned that some of the big boys were moving into town, we panicked because, of course, you start hearing, oh my God, Major Video, Jumbo Video is coming. They only charge $2.99 for a movie. Still big bucks back then. But, you know, I mean, the way we figured it was if you charged $5 for a movie, it still cost a family around $4.50 each to watch a movie. So if you get a family movie, you rent it for $4.50, you're saving like, you know, almost $15, you know, taking the family to a theater, right? Jumbo Video, they were offering free popcorn when you browse for a movie. We didn't carry popcorn, so naturally we got popcorn in. Then when Major Video moved in into town, you know, at around the same, I think Major Video came first and then Jumbo came later, and then Blockbuster bought out Major Video. So all the Major Videos turned into Blockbusters, and they turned the industry on its head as well. They were starting to charge $1.99 for newer movies and only a dollar. So we went from, you know, $5-6 for a movie down to $2.99 for a movie down to $1.99. And now movies were really expensive at the time too. It's not like today, you know, where you buy new movies for $26.95 and you go, oh my God, I don't know. I mean, they were over $100. I mean, we were paying, you know, maybe $110 for, you know, any movie that was released. And a Disney movie might cost like $130, $140. I mean, they were expensive and you had to make your money on it really quick. Plus, we would get multiple copies in each store as well. Now, when Jumbo Video and Major Video moved into the area, I mean, they were getting 20, 30 copies at a time for some of these A movies. I mean, we might get like 10. Like when Star Wars came out, for instance, I think we got like 10 copies of it, you know, for each store. And that was a lot for us. I mean, they would get 20, 30 movies, you know, for some stupid ass movie, you know, that happened to do well at the box office. But, you know, we knew it wouldn't have any lasting part, but they would get like 20, 30 copies. We couldn't compete. So, you know, I mean, we looked at it this way. If we couldn't make it within 2 months on a movie, there was no interest in it anymore. So the profitability of renting movies just really diminished for us. And either we were going to become more like a Blockbuster or a Jumbo Video, or we were just going to stagnate, you know, and we would have to depend on customers. You know, I mean, customers would get angry when they came into the store and we didn't have a movie they wanted, you know, and they'd say, well, I'm going to go over to Blockbuster then. I know they'll have a copy for me.
That's harsh. That's harsh, customer. Come on. Oh, they've been treating you so well for all these years.
I thought you were friends of ours. But anyway, that was the way it went. You know, that's the history of the membership costs.
Well, and the one thing I want to know is, you know, Mike, I know you're big on Halloween. You love to go all out on costumes. And I'm wondering, at either of your stores, was there ever like holiday decorations or special promotions or Halloween? Did you guys dress up? Like what kind of things did you do for special events?
Oh, yeah. We used to dress up. Well, Christmas, of course, we'd decorate, you know, on Christmas. We'd make sure all our Christmas movies were all lined up and, you know, we had specials on them. Halloween, same thing, all the horror movies. Even St. Patrick's Day, if something was remotely, you know, like St. Patrick's, like what's the one horror movie, B-movie, the Leprechaun?
Yeah, Leprechaun, like, or Darby O'Gill and the Little People, put that
out there. Exactly. Yeah, Leprechaun was a big one, yeah. So, you know, we did stuff like that, sure. Yeah, you know, during New Year's, we'd even have special promotions as well too, you know, where you could rent like 10 movies over the holiday and get a free VCR or something, you know.
Whoa.
We rented out the VCRs as well.
Mike, what about you? Did you have a very festive store in any way?
No, nothing. They did nothing. You remember that. There was nothing. Yeah, but I don't think any of the stores in our town really did any festive things. Like, even our local one, they did nothing. They were so by the books.
And I do want to know, Mike, so again, it was kind of like you're going there, you're learning your job is, you know, not what you thought it was. Did your responsibilities evolve over the year that you worked there? And what would you say was your favorite part of the job?
So I feel like working there, it kind of killed my soul a little bit. I'm not going to lie. People have such fond memories of Blockbuster. There's documentaries. I felt dead inside. My favorite thing was just doing returns so I could go look at the back of the cover and put the tape back and not look at anybody. That was it. It was just like, oh, if only I could be watching this movie at home. Put it back on the shelf.
We had such a different dynamic in our stores.
Joe, like, so what ultimately, you had a lot of responsibilities, I'm sure, but what was your favorite part of the job?
Well, free stuff.
Yes.
I mean, after a while, popcorn, discounts on new VCRs. I mean, I always had the latest VCR.
My favorite thing about my dad working at the video movie place was him coming home with the Coleco. He would bring home Smurfs, the Smurfs game, and the Coleco. And that to me was like, thank God he works here. I have a lot of perks as far as you working at the video store, Dad.
Yeah. Hey, so not to mention all the posters.
That's the number one. I don't know why, but we were getting the poster shipped to our house.
Yeah. What I did was I had posters sent to each store. And because I was the general manager, right, of all 13 stores, I would have posters sent to my house as well. Because my argument was, is I needed extras in case there were some that got ripped or whatever. And they said, yeah, sure, no problem.
We had boxes of them sitting in our basement just on a rack for the longest time. And I would sift through them and pull them out. Like, I had the Chucky poster on my wall, like Child's Play 1. These are all video store posters, which I actually think sometimes have the better artwork in a lot of cases, or it's the ones people connect to because they know the VHS artwork, right? Like, you know, Night of the Living Dead 1990 has a very different theatrical poster from the VHS poster. And so to me, I like the video posters and I would put them all on my walls because they're in our basement.
That's amazing. And Joe, I'm curious because this was like the heyday of the video, like, companies actually wanting to promote. They're setting standees. They're offering all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Can you recall like one that really stood out to you, like a video promotion that they were pushing at you and or some type of promotional, you know, display item?
Well, we got two Darth Vader standees. I remember that. Now, of course, they would only send a few of those, right? So out of the 13 stores, or just our two main stores would get them because you had to buy so many movies to get one, right? And we got an Indiana Jones one as well.
That's neat. Yeah.
And extra large posters too, you know? So sometimes we put it in the window and, you know, you could see it from, you know, a kilometer away.
That being the case, you know, these are promoting movies, trying to get interest in them. But what just organically during your time in the video store, do you recall being like the most popular title or titles? Like, what were people calling in like in a certain period, like every day? Like, do you have it yet? Do you have it yet? That they're getting mad that you don't have it.
I think I mentioned Star Wars. I mean, it was like a feeding frenzy for that.
Yeah.
And we would take the bookings as well. You know, we'd say, okay, it should be here on Thursday next week, so you can reserve it, a copy if you want.
Now, I got to ask, was it the CBS Fox copy? Was
oh,
it this
God,
one?
Yes.
Yeah.
You are amazing. You still have that.
Wow. Oh, I have all the versions of this. I've just found it thrift store. So I have this. I have, you know, the next release, the third release, like all those. Yeah. The
Alien, when it came out on video, that was huge. Oh, my God. Indiana Jones, of course. Well, Raiders of the Lost Ark, it was called. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Everybody wanted Spielberg, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Science fiction, fantasy, action movies were really popular. You know, just probably the same today. You know, those were the big
changers. And Mike, you said, you know, you're not getting to recommend movies very often, but did you see like a certain film be like popular? Like, oh, there's so many copies, but they're all gone, like on the shelf.
I think, like, we had VHS and DVD there, right? I was working at that time when there was the switchover. So it was a weird time where you'd see both on the shelves a bit. I kind of remember, I think it was X-Men. I want to say X-Men was that era. It's hard to remember. I have to, because I watched so many movies back then. I may have been working there and getting free rentals, but I was also going to other video stores like Landry's Video Dad. You remember that that place that was like an old barn.
Oh, yeah. You're right. He was one of the first in town, too.
Yeah, it was like a massive barn. It was like, I think there was dirt on the floor in parts.
He was located at the edge of the city.
Yes, at the very edge of the city. I liked it because his horror section had that's where I could get, you know, Evil Dead and Italian horror films. He had it all. So it's really hard for me to remember what exactly I was getting from Blockbuster because I cared so little about what they had. But X-Men, I remember being a really popular rental.
Okay.
I think it was that one. If not, it may have just been that I wanted to rent it.
And Joe, I know obviously Blockbuster did their big previously viewed tapes for sale. Were you guys selling off a lot of old stock at your stores?
No, because we were in the process of building yet. We needed to develop an inventory. The video business between 1984 and 1988 was in its infancy at the time. So, we had a lot of building to do. And when when Major Video moved into town, I mean, they came in with like 5,000 movies at a time. And we were sitting there with maybe 600. they had multiple copies too. The thing we had over them as well is I think they only got VHS movies and there was Beta at the time. So every time we got in a movie, we got in VHS and Beta. And when we advertised, we always built that up because a lot of people owned Beta machines.
Now, that being the case, did you, with Beta, ever get into Laserdisc?
No.
By 1988, it wasn't quite hitting as a thing.
No, It was really a neat technology. I remember it coming out. But I don't remember if I was in 1988.
None of the stores in the Kitchener-Waterloo region really even sold or rented Laserdisc, except for Jumbo. Do you remember?
Oh,
Jumbo
very Video. Vaguely, yes.
Jumbo Video, right at the front, had a ton of laser discs. That was way after. That would have been the mid-90s.
What about the RCA video discs, the ones you had to insert and then pull it out and then
I remember those, but you know what? That was new technology after I'd already left the industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one thing is, obviously, you're the general manager. You're having to go around to the different stores. I'm curious with customers, you're not the manager of each individual location, but what were some of the craziest customer stories you were hearing, whether condition of tapes being returned or just behavior in the stores that maybe you had to be informed of?
Well, it was a different dynamic for me, but I did work in the stores. One of my jobs was to work in one of the main stores every Saturday because Saturdays obviously were the busiest days. So, oh my God, where do you start? I mean, we had little things like people coming in and saying, your movies are shit. I want a refund. This is awful. We forced them to rent the movie. Maybe it was a drama that their wife picked up and they didn't like it. Who knows? There's always something. But I have to admit, some of the movies that we did rent out were shit.
Can't deny it.
Listen to this. After a couple of years, the industry started maturing and we'd get these guys coming around in their cars and they would, come in, they say, you want to buy some movies? I say, yeah. So they take me out to the parking lot and they pop their trunk and their trunk would be full of these B movies. And they were cheap. Okay. So movies were costing us around, $85 to $100. And their movies were $29, $19. And, some of them were really bad. I mean, most people liked them though. They were really campy and really stupid. They were like your grade D, grade B movies. But we made a lot of money on them. So once in a while, you get somebody coming in saying, this is, how can you guys rent this garbage?
The independent Canadian film industry is coming directly to you. I love it.
I think that's probably what it was, yes. But I got to tell you, there is one time that really stands out. You probably heard about this Reverend Jerry Falwell.
Sure.
Okay, and his Moral Majority movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think his son took over. I think Jerry Falwell Jr. took over. But anyways, this Christian organization announced that they were going to review Disney movies and other children's movies at the time, for questionable and pornographic content. But I remember during that time, this woman came in with a couple of her friends And she was older. I mean, she was, I think at the time she was in her 40s or whatever. And she came in and she says, "You should be taking those children's movies down. Do you realize they're being reviewed?" I said, "No." I said, "That's in the United States. I mean, this has nothing to do with us." And I said, "He's just a menace." He says, "You should be taking them down anyways. Do you realize that you could have a whole lot of them being banned?" And I said, "Come on." Well, so I had a manager that worked there who was a little bit of a hothead. And he started arguing with her. And I said, "Geez, Jake, just simmer down." I mean, there were other people in the store and they were standing there with their jaws dropping and looking at her. And she was actually grabbing the boxes off the shelves. And I just quietly went over and I said, "Listen, I need to call the police, you know, if you don't stop this. This is ridiculous." You know, and I couldn't understand, why were they targeting our store of all the stores? Well, I talked to our competition, which was just across the way, and they went in there as well too and caused a commotion. That really sticks out in my mind as being a crazy moment.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a lot of influence here in Canada as well, you know, this organization. So that sticks out. That's crazy.
It would. Yeah. I'm curious though, what about theft? Because any business has to deal with this idea of, okay, people are going to be stealing things, especially in this time when the videos are so precious. So what did you, Joe, have to do about theft prevention? And what type of schemes were people running that you recall?
Well, we had bars in all the windows, of course. I'll tell you, the biggest problem we had was break-ins. Okay.
Oh.
And being the general manager of, well, it was mostly the six corporate stores, because the franchise stores, they had their own owners. So they ran their own stores. They had a break-in. They had to deal with it. But I had to deal with any break-ins in any one of our six locations. The break-ins, they usually concentrated on the equipment that we had. You know, they would steal the VCRs that we would have close. I don't know how they would do it, but they would smash the windows and try to get in. Like some of the bars that we had were out a little bit, so they could reach in. So we'd had the VCRs so close to the window that they could actually lift a VCR up underneath and pull it out through the broken window.
Wow.
So weird. So I'd get called in the middle of the night. That was the big thing. Now, we had people not returning movies. And that was a bit of a problem.
That was a problem, that Blockbuster too. You'd have movies out for a year.
Yeah, so somebody would bring, you know, or somebody would bring back their movie and say that, "Oh, you know, this movie, it doesn't work. And, you know, I never watched it." And if they were a big problem, we'd just say, "Okay, bye."
When I was younger, I remember being taught by you, you know, it was one of the rules of life, the 11th commandment, don't leave a VHS tape in the car.
Oh.
Did you have VHS tapes?
In the summertime.
Did you have VHS tapes come back melted? Because that was something I knew as a kid, and one of the main rules of life.
Yeah. Besides, please be kind and rewind.
Yeah.
Never leave your VHS tape or beta tape sitting on the seat of your car in the summertime. Yeah, we got those back. Yeah. The biggest problem was fixing tapes too. You know, the tape would snap, right? People would bring them. They'd say, "How much is this going to cost me?" "Well, let me look at it." And, you know, we'd take the case apart and open it up and tape it together. You know, like we had special tape, you know, that we'd do it. And it's, "Okay, don't worry about it, no charge." But there were times where they would get stuck in the machine and they would just get scrunched up so much. But sometimes I would just cut those ends.
Snip out a scene.
Yeah. It would be right in the middle of a movie, right? And I would cut out like a minute and a half. And somebody would rent that movie, bring it back. They'd say, "I don't know. It's like there's something missing." It just didn't seem right. But it would be like the splice and the cut would be so innocuous. You wouldn't notice it. It would just like kind of skip over.
That's pretty great.
Somebody would realize there's just something wrong here. Sometimes it would be in more than one area too. So there'd be a cut in one there and then later on in the movie, another cut. So, but we tried to get as much mileage out of each tape as we could. I mean, we had to, they were so expensive.
Yeah, I've picked up before former rental tapes that still had the original sticker on it from the vendor, where, like $120. You can't just be throwing $120 to get a new tape, you know?
Oh, my God. Yeah, no kidding. Jeez.
So let me talk to you then. It's been 4 years, you know, 1984, 1988. The world is changing. Technology is changing. The video store environment is becoming a normal place for people to go to now. So what led you to leaving at arguably what was becoming kind of the height of the video industry in 1988?
Well, as you said, I was in the industry for 4 years. with Blockbuster moving into town, Jumbo Video, and when we had Landry's Video, they kept on expanding as well too. Although he was more of a barn style and kind of primitive as well, he bought a lot of movies. The owner of my company, he just didn't want to spend a lot of money. He pissed the profits away basically at the beginning, you know, when we were making huge money, and he didn't have anything left to invest. I mean, I even did a study, you know, of all our stores and the industry, and took it to him and said, listen, Terry, this is what we have to do. You know, we have to expand. Either we're going to die, or we're always going to end up as a mom and pop style store, or you're going to have to invest some money. You know, we have to expand. We have to do something. And he said, oh, this is really great. Never did anything. So I left the industry. You know, I just thought there's no future here. You know, where am I going to go? My salary at the time was predicated on the profits that we made. And of course, the first 4 years, I mean, we had great profitability because we were in expansion mode all the time. But once 1988 rolled around, yeah, it just didn't happen.
Huh, so you never considered saying, well, I know how the business works. I could make a profitable business. Let me at least buy into a franchise. Like, the video store industry was just done for you.
Tell them what you actually wanted to open.
Okay, well, I wanted to open a comic book store, but that's a story for another time.
Okay, yes. Look at my other podcast, Wizards, the podcast guy, yeah, comics. We'll get into that, yeah, someday.
Here we were, Adam, in 1988. There's like 14 or 15 little mom and pop stores all over the place, and two or three big giant box stores that rented out movies. I mean, we had to contend with places like The Brick moved into town. Okay, The Brick is still around. They sell a lot. I don't know if you guys got The Brick in the United States. It's like a Best Buy, kind of. They sell furniture, though, and they sold video machines at the time. So they ate into our hardware portion of our business, and Blockbuster ate into our video rental portion of our business. So there was really no future left, you know, unless you were willing to open up a huge store and really make a major investment. And it was possible. We could have. Now, I didn't have the resources for it. And I looked around and I saw the universe of renting movies at the time. And I thought, there's no sense. Back in those days, people thought, oh, I love movies. You know, I've rented movies. I could open up a video store. And they did, you know, so, and none of them survived. I mean, they all went out of business. Some of them went out of business within a year of opening. They thought that they would become a millionaire if they opened up a video rental business. Oh, what a great idea. But everybody down the street is doing exactly the same thing. I mean, after a while, variety stores started getting videos in as well. So we had to compete with them too. They would get in, you know, a limited number of movies, but somebody could go into a 7-Eleven, for instance, and just get a, you know, rent a movie for $2 or $3. So,
well, yeah, and even eventually, McDonald's is starting to sell tapes at their restaurants. You could buy the Addams Family or Wayne's World.
That's the U.S. I never heard of
that. You guys never had that in Canada? Oh, that was a big promotion.
Yeah.
So now, I know Mike has shared a few things on social media that we'll reshare when this episode comes out, but did you keep any mementos other than the posters that you had collected over the years? Did you have any, like, tapes that you brought home, or, like, any other promotional items that were a memory of that time for you?
The movie posters is a big thing. Michael ended up getting all of them. I weeded them out every once in a while. You know, I'd pull out just the ones that I liked or were big movies. I gotta tell you, yeah, I didn't really have very much. The only thing I got is I got a few business cards left over that say general manager. And I got a bunch of coupon books, you know, with all the coupons in it. Now it's my memento of the video movie place.
Now, Mike, Blockbuster, you're there for a year, your soul has been crushed, but, like, was there, like, one positive memory? Like, if you had to, like, look back and say, well, I got to do this, when you sum up getting out of Blockbuster, we know why, but what could have made you stay, if anything?
I honestly don't think anything could have made me stay, but, you know, I did enjoy actually talking about movies with certain people. Like, it was nice. Like, the employees didn't care about movies, but, you know, people coming in wanted to talk about movies. They actually cared about it. Most people do, right? Mm-hmm. You're coming in.
Well,
for
most people like us. Yeah.
Yeah. There would be the odd person that asked for a recommendation. I was probably the worst person to ask because I really just hung out in the horror section.
Like, have you seen Basket Case? Yes. I'm just saying.
Like, oh, Blockbuster would be
movies. Now, I want to ask you, just like, after you guys have left, I mean, this is many years later, especially for you, Joe. We're getting into the mid-2000s. Blockbusters are starting to close. This industry has finally started to collapse. Yeah. What were your observations at the time? Like, were you surprised it lasted that long? Or like, what did you think as you saw the video rental industry start to disappear?
I was kind of sad because I can remember as a family, we would go to the video store on a Friday night. Saturday was a holiday, you know, Saturday, no school, no work. And, you know, the kids would search for their movies and, you know, my wife and I would search for our movies and, you know, it was a real outing. And I kind of missed that. But I do remember, you know, when Jumbo Video went out of business. Well, actually, Jumbo Video, I think, was bought out by Rogers Video. That's a big cable company here, but they got into the video movie rental business at a late stage, actually, you know, when the rental industry was dying. I remember Blockbuster selling off their movies. I mean, I love the fact that I could go in and buy cheap movies at the time. So, you know, I took advantage of that. I mean, I have a heck of a DVD and Blu-ray collection, and so does Michael as well. But that's really, yeah, that's the thing. It was kind of sad for me. I knew about streaming. I hadn't been involved. I think Netflix at the time was renting movies. You could buy mail or something. Uh-huh. You probably know more about that, Michael, than I would.
Yeah, because we in Canada, we actually didn't have Netflix. We had zip.ca.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think Blockbuster had shut down, but we had been given a gift card for a year of rentals from zip.ca. And there was different tiers. And I'm sure it was like Netflix. That was kind of the beginning of the end. It's interesting. We're all talking about this kind of at, you know, another major time in history, which is right now. Like, Best Buy is no longer carrying physical media.
That's
like
right.
Blu-rays anymore as of what, this year. Like, that's it. I remember when Blockbuster was shutting down too, and the weirdest thing, they had for the DVDs, they had these like printed images of the artwork of the movies, and they sold those off. Maybe I say I was a bit stupid. I still have them, but I have like a stack of those.
Oh, I went in and bought a ton of them too for my local store. Yeah, I totally have those.
And I don't know why I bought them, but I still have them. And, you know, like, it was something where I was like, I need these. I need, even my wife, who doesn't really like physical media, she was like, oh, yeah, get this one. And we bought a stack of them with the artwork.
Really? You have to show me those next time I come over.
Yeah, I got to find them. You know, before this, this, you know, like, you were asking about Mementos kept and things. Like, I still have my Blockbuster shirt. I haven't been able to pull it out, though. It's in storage. And I still have my membership card from it. Like, it's stuff I wanted to keep. And I don't know why I wanted to keep that stuff, but I did. And more than anything, and you said it, Dad, we may not have video stores anymore, but people like us, we have the video store in our house. Like, I have like an insane amount of movies right in front of me. It goes from floor to ceiling of movies. And this wall is not a wall. It's a secret door. And behind it is movies. Like, I have movies everywhere. We have, Adam, behind you is a video store, an actual VHS video store.
Yeah.
I have one shelf of VHS tapes.
Yeah. Just like you, Adam, I have DVDs and, well, mostly all Blu-rays now.
Yeah, he has four shelves, floor to ceiling. We have all just put video stores in our house. So that's right. They may be dead out in the streets, but in our homes and in our hearts, they are alive.
They are still there.
There it is. That is the way to wrap it up. Yeah, we can't give it up. Like you say, there are those personal memories that are tied to that space and those experiences. And thank you guys so much for sharing your unique experiences with this. I mean, I just loved hearing these stories, and I'm sure everybody listening has gotten a kick out of them as well. So thank you again so much. And, you know, Mike, I always like to give you a chance to plug any projects you have going on right now, just in case people want to find out, you know, Blockbuster wasn't your thing, but you did get into the movie business.
Well, if you're in Canada, there is a rental store called Bay Street Video, and you can still rent movies there or buy movies. And they have my movie Zombie Town for purchase and for rent. So you can.
Oh,
go
my
there.
God! Yeah. Really? This is news.
Anyways, find me on social media. You can find me at the Mike Schwartz on X, Twitter, and Mike Schwartz Writes on Instagram, where I talk about my comic Armored and whatever movies I may be working on.
Well, that does it for our interview and this season of Rental Return. That's right. Season 4 has come to a close, but what a great collection of stories and experiences they shared with us. Mike and Joe, thank you again so much. Here's the thing, though. We're wrapping it up with something very special. And that is, if you remember David from our previous episode this season, he talked about his documentary 7 Year Rental, which he actually filmed in the waning days of the video rental industry while this store was about to close. It is a fascinating film. It's about 90 minutes long, and we are going to be doing an exclusive screening on Zoom for everybody who is interested to see that, wants to get that hit of nostalgia. So we are going to be doing that on Sunday, April 14th. It's going to be an evening screening, so it's going to be taking place across all the time zones. So wherever you're at, if you want to participate in this, it's going to be at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 8:30 p.m. Central Time, which is 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time, which is then 6:30 p.m. Pacific. So whatever time zone you fall in, if you want to be a part of that, all you have to do is you can DM me on social media, whether it's X or Instagram or Blue Sky. I'm at Hoju Koolander, HojuKooLander. Or you can also just send me an email directly, hojukoolander@gmail.com. And I will be able to get the Zoom link out to you. But it's going to be a very fun experience. Plus, you'll get to have a Q&A. David is going to be there watching along with us, and he will answer any questions you have. So please, please choose to participate. Like I say, that is Sunday, April 14th. So you have all this next week to reach out and keep an eye on social media as well. I'll be giving you some reminders. But what a great season it has been. Thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, we'll catch you at the video store.
This has been a presentation of Geekster Media.